Back live on Placemaking the Solar Punk, and live with me now is Moment, Zweitat, Mara Klein and Andrei Zakharov. And I'm happy to have this channel really looking on placemaking. We have examples from a garden, from a roof, and from the ground, so to say. And what does that mean? We will find out in the next 1 hour. I would love to start with just a tiny introduction of everyone, and then Moment can start to present his project. We can everybody of you can have a little introduction to their projects, and then we can discuss together in this way. Moment, would you like to introduce your project first?
Hi everyone, thank you for having me here today. It's really important platform for me. This is the first time I'm going to be speaking in public about this project. We have announced it online, but we haven't really got any sort of discussion going or in the media or like a part of our website that got online last week. So my name is Mo'min and I'm from Jenin. I live between London and Palestine for the last 10 years now. And I am a theater maker, playwright, and an artist. I grew up in the north of Palestine in a city called Jenin. And my project will be drawing around my childhood space where I grew up in the forest as a Palestinian Bedouin in one of the largest forests in the West Bank. This is what my project is about, and it's called the Swatat Garden. Swatat is my family name, but the place also called the Swatat because my family were the first people to live in this forest. And my grandfather, the one who plants all the trees around this forest, which is now becoming a rundown forest. And then I grew up as a child playing all the time in this forest. And then later on in life, I go back to this forest to find it out that it's not accessible anymore. And then here where my project began to how to bring back this space to the community. And yeah, so this is what my project will be about, and this is what we'll be talking about.
I'm just looking up, what is the homepage of your project? Where can we find it?
Oh yeah, so basically we have two things going on in online that you can find the project. If you go to www.sweetatgarden.com, you will find the website, okay? And then if you go GoFundMe, because we are launching a fundraising online things to have seed funding to start to be artists who will be working with us as an architect, as an urban planning, who will design the whole project for us. If you go to GoFundMe, if you go to the website, you will definitely find the link to GoFundMe and to Playground for Palestine and other project links there, and you will find all about the project. I will repeat it again. It's www.sweetatgarden.com. Jacob, your sound.
All right. The links are coming up to the stream. Up there. And Mara, you've been having quite some success with some weird project and some taking over a shopping center, or so to say.
What do you mean by weird, Jacob? Weird.
I mean, shopping centers are weird places, right?
Yeah. So I introduced it just briefly, right? Later, we talk a bit more about it, right? Yeah. Yeah, so thanks for having me, Jacob. Really happy to be here. Also with Momin, who I met a long time ago in Jenin in 2011. So a small world. Yeah, so my name is Mara Klein, and I'm an artist and part today as part of the collective Operation Himmelblick, which means Operation Skyview, which André, the third speaker, is also part of, by the way. Yeah, and so we're a collective of people from different disciplines, architects, urban planners, artists, whose aim is to reclaim urban space that is underused, namely rooftops. And today I will talk mostly about a project that we did this summer because it illustrates what our intention is with this project of bringing together peoples of the neighborhood. But I'll talk about it later a bit in detail about the weird experience.
Yeah, thank you so much. André, what are you up to?
Hey, hello. Yeah. So what I'm mostly involved in and spending pretty much all of my days on is I'm part of an initiative which is creating a community land trust in Berlin. So it's a foundation which buys ground, so it collects resources, monetary resources, and buys land in order to give it in leasehold contracts to groups, initiatives, cooperatives, under the condition that they open it up to as many people as possible, that there are social criteria, like when they, for example, rent flats, or that the neighborhood has a say when talking about how using the space, for example, commercial spaces, like what is needed actually in the neighborhood. And through this, decoupling it from the market and creating a different type of commons governance on how urban space, mostly we're starting here in Berlin, but we're open to areas around. We want to make the connection between areas around Berlin and Berlin, but we are limited to Berlin. And yeah, so this is a project. It's called Stadt Boden Stiftung. So Community Land Trust Berlin, that's how you find us.
Great. I think this gives us an interesting, starting point to see, to go into this discussion. What is the practices or the different angles you can take on really like on the practice of placemaking? And in the Telegram chat that you can join, the first recommendation for collaboration was directed to Momin to collaborate with some open source seed project. That's a cool comment. I'd love to hear a bit more on the context and on the difficulties and on the maybe on the dream that you have, Momin, around your vision and what this dream can vitalize the community and the neighborhood.
It's growing up in a place like Palestine, like the West Bank, is not an easy place to grow up. But it's there is no time to complain in the same time. So there is only time here to make things work and to make things happen in the best possible way. Otherwise, you're gonna end up in a lot of complicity that will not be helpful to neither yourself or your mental health or your sort of community engagement outreach facility or communication. So when I was a kid, growing as a Bedouin, my only space it was available for me to play, it was this forest, and I was very lucky. Unlike other kids who have to be growing up in a refugee camp, which is built from concrete, which there is no any little green area for them to have access to. So I was way lucky. And this is where the whole things for me, why I care about greenery and space and community engagement. And one of my earliest memory as a childhood, it was waking up in a summer holiday from school and going to the forest and creating my own universe there by building toys, building cities, building like shops, like from trash, from rubbish that people have left behind there, and make it recycle and create all my sort of inner childhood playful space. And then one day, I remember that this forest also saved my life. So one day I was during the Second Intifada, which is pretty harsh military intifada. It was a lockdown, which is funny that we all have experienced lockdown now in a way. But I have been experienced lockdown since I was a kid, since really I opened my eye to this life, to a military lockdown. And then one day I was, it was just begun to go to school by myself. And you know, this memory is very nice memory. You would never leave this memory behind. And then I was coming back from school by myself, and then I experienced a heavy military Markava right next to the forest. And the forest was my way to school. It sounded like a spring awakening, you know? And this is where I discovered everything in my life. You know, I discovered my sexual sense of things. I discovered my dreams. I discovered who I am. I discovered my sense of smell. I discovered my sense of learning, unnecessarily learning process, you know. I discovered everything. So, and then one day I was walking there, and then I always also had animals. I always have dogs. I always grow up having horses and donkeys, and the house of those animals, it was always this forest. And then one day I was shot at by a sniper, because it was sort of a beginning of a lockdown, of a curfew lockdown, military curfew lockdown. And then I have to run to the forest. And this is the only way I was basically saved my life. Many times, not only one, not only twice, many times that I was going back from school, and then I will encounter military soldier, and then I'll be shot at, and then I will have to run to this forest. So all my sad, beautiful, amazing, crazy memory is in there. This year, I went to Palestine to do a documentary film about something different, about a theater maker called Giuliano Merchamis, who were my teacher and who were assassinated with a German company. I went down to Palestine early this year in February, end of February, to do a documentary with the Munich Film Fund. And then the lockdown happened, so the German crew went back to Germany, and as a Palestinian who holding a Palestinian passport who have a lack of freedom of movement, I got stuck in Jenin again. Not stuck, but I got sort of not able to move again, which it was a bit annoying, but in the meantime, it was good because I thought it was an important time. Later on, I find out that it was an important time for me to reconnect to this place again. And then I have a daughter. She came to visit me with her mom that halfway through the lockdown. And then my daughter's only was turning 2 years when she was in Jenin. And then she always wanted to go to a playground. And then I wanted to take her to a playground in Jenin, and which is the forest. And I found out all the equipment in the playground in that forest, it completely destroyed and really extremely dangerous for kids to be around. because they are metal, sharp, plastic, broken plastic, and really sharp. So, and then I decide to basically to investigate the whole things and to have this project back to the community and to work on this in this project and to bring it back. In the meantime, around all of this, in the middle, there was also a facility for all kind of people that access to this place, but also destroyed, like a stairs or steps or a small walkway to disabled people or the blind, because there is also a blind school next to the forest, so the blind student can go and enjoy the forest, but absolutely it's all destroyed and left behind. So I thought that was a good responsibility for me to take on and to speak about this project, at least to speak about it, at least to raise awareness about it in the local community. So I start to hold groups of meeting in the forest with my local community, who is basically partly my family, partly my neighbors who I grew up with, you know. And then they all agreed that this place need to be redone and this place need to be accessible to everybody again. And then I sat down with the local government there and we had agreed that they're going to give us the space, which is they get, now we have the space. We about to form a contract with them. I don't know how long, it might be for 10 years, 15 years. And then also in the meantime, there is an open air abandoned theater there that once was full of life for kids. There was a lot of clowning show, a lot of circus show, a lot of musical show. There was a lot of fire camp around it there and all of this. So now we are basically, in this case, I start to get in touch with a friend and a friend of a friend, and then I find out there's a place called Playground for Palestine that they have a community group in New York in America, and they have a community groups in London. So we got in touch with the team in London because I base in London now. And the team in London, they love the idea, and then they pick up on this project to be their responsibility of funding the equipment for the playground only. But what we're looking for is we're looking for more than the playground. We're looking for a place to be accessible to all people from all different walk. We're looking for to renovate the theater space and to make it accessible again and to make it into like a theater or an art hub, a community space. We're looking to establish a program for alternative outdoor self-learning education about the history of the space and about what is in the space. And what stories had happened in this space. So now we have got the fund for the equipment, which is a good news for the playground. And then this is why we launch another like a seed funding that we can pay artists and architect and thinker and from the community and from the international artist community to join this group, because we want people to be paid to do this job so yeah, this is basically part one of the project.
Yeah, now we are interested in part two, of course. But I also I want to open up for questions, both to, like, you can post them in the Telegram chat, and Mara and Andre that are here as well, if you have questions to the project that are burning, please feel free to share.
Yeah, I have a question, Momin. I wonder, like, because Janine also has like seen like a few projects that have, you know, the Freedom Theater, but also Cinema Janine, which came from like completely an outsider's perspective coming in and creating something.
Yep.
without like real knowledge of the place. I just wondered how people feel about you like returning and kind of taking this initiative, if you feel like there's quite a positive ground to build this, or how's your experience been with this?
I think your question is a very good question, because our main obstacle here is the sustainability. And in every step we take in here, we always having the sustainability question above our mind, you know, around our mind, like in a surround sound, you know. And you're right. Basically, the Freedom Theater, if we want to have a look at this two perfect example, the Freedom Theater and Cinema Janine, okay? And the two of them give us the different answer, which is a great sad and a great for our project. Sad in a way that the tragedy what happened in the Freedom Theater is obviously the people of who were in the first line benefit from the Freedom Theater have lost the main tour, you know, the legend man who created the whole idea and vision around it, okay, and who basically taught me to become who I am now, you know. So we lost him, and that's for me now a lesson to learn how safety and security in working in this environment is the most important thing, you know. But on the other hand, the Freedom Theater in terms of sustainability is still working, you know. It's working in a way that is adapt now to where the Freedom Theater is today. It doesn't have to be necessarily working in the same speed or the same idea or the same formulation that it used to be working when Giuliano was alive, because Giuliano was a one-man show. He knew what he wanted, okay? I wouldn't agree that the Freedom Theater will be still working exactly how the same energy were when Giuliani was alive, because Giuliano's not there anymore. So we need to have a new identity, which is now they're working on it, I believe, which is great. The other sad and also good for a new project to come with somebody who have a knowledge and an outside eyes and an inside eyes to the whole things, which is now Cinema Janine, okay? Which is, I don't know, maybe some people know, some people doesn't know that Cinema Janine have been bulldozed down to the ground and been replaced to a shopping mall center, a sheep shopping mall center, terrible design. And this is sad now, okay? Here is like, we want to stand on this question, what the sustainability of this project gonna be, okay? So I wouldn't say that the reason why the Cinema Janine were bulldozed and run down because it was mainly foreign young creative people who come to the place without having a full knowledge of the culture and the community understanding of things. I wouldn't say that was the reason. I would only say the reason was there was a gap between building a cinema space in Janine and between how to keep this sustainable. Okay. I remember when Cinema Janine opened and when I was a student at the Freedom Theater at the same time, I used to finish my school time at the Freedom Theater as an actor. And then walking back to my flat, which is opposite Cinema Janine, okay, and seeing like 70 people working from all different backgrounds, from Germany, from mainly Germany, obviously, but it was also other people working there, and like Palestinian local young people working, and it was sort of refreshing. It was like giving a big, massive, huge hope. Like for me, it was like, if it was the case, it's still the same thing, I wouldn't have left Janine, you know? It's opened up a lot of like dreams for us to see all of this visual in that time. But obviously it was no plan. The plan was is just for tomorrow, you know, or after tomorrow. The plan wasn't even how to keep this space sustainable, how to take an advantage of the fund that the Cinema Janine have received from an NGO organization or from the German government that time, okay, and to make it circles, recycling inside the building itself, rather than is just spending money and goes and never come back, you know? So, and here where I want to say about death of the Eid for Palestine, I think is sort of very close together. Like the Eid and the death is the same things for Palestinian now. Obviously Palestinian who work with a big NGO fund, you know? But what I want to do in this term, and if we want to go back to this new project, I think it's much easier because first, I speak the language easily. I born there. I know the community. I have been involved in a lot of different level of community engagement project in there. Okay. And I think I felt that young people in the community there look up for what this guy who used to be very controversial working with the Freedom Theater, now he went away and come back. What he want to do in this space is he's going to do another controversial thing or he's going to do another thing. But this time I'm not coming back by myself. This time we're working with, as a collective, we're working with a lot of young people, male and female and different gender from the ground itself, that they're the one who are going to hold the ground together, you know? And we still open for international collaboration, obviously, because this is very important for us. So it's this question is does have no one side answer. It's have a perfect example to look at, which is Cinema Jenin and Freedom Theater.
I find it super interesting and also sad to hear that the whole work that went into building the Cinema Jenin just got replaced. But I mean, projects come and go and rise again.
Francesco Candura,
the question of sustainability is great. I mean, what this is revealing. I would love with like looking at the time to invite Mara to share on your project, and then we can come back together around the commonalities and challenges of our project in the very end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so thank you, Momin, for explaining. I find it super interesting, this question of who creates what where, you know, like how are you anchored in a space? So I'm here to talk about Operation Himmelblick, and as I mentioned before, we're a collective which is Berlin-based of a group of interdisciplinary peoples, and our aim is to reinvigorate spaces that are not used so often, which are rooftops, which are precious spaces in cities that have little space that people can share. And I would like to share today very briefly one of our projects that we did this summer, which was like a pilot, a first test phase for this group. So we went to Chemnitz in Saxony, and we were part of a festival called the Begehungen, which is the biggest cultural festival there. And it's run, I just want to mention it because I find it it's a really great festival. It's run by a group of volunteers that come back every year for the last 17 years, which I think says a lot about their dedication and also the quality of a festival. And the idea of this festival is to reinvigorate spaces which are underused or which people don't go to. So in the past years, they've been to a brewery, prison, lots of spaces that are normally not really accessible or not of interest. And this year they were in the Heckert area, which is a huge area of prefabricated buildings. Prefabricated buildings in German, Plattenbau, which a lot of people know from GDR architecture. And the Heckert was actually the third largest in the whole of the GDR. So it's massive. And it was built in the 70s on this utopian idea of providing good housing for workers. So enough light, enough space, access to all important amenities, Grundversorgung. And now, since the fall of the wall and in the last 20 years, it's really turned into quite the opposite. It's become very empty. There's an aging population which doesn't really have access to amenities because everything is moving out. So there's a lot of space there, but not so much room for innovation. And this year, the Begehung went there, and they went to one huge platte, one huge prefabricated building, and asked artists to reinvigorate the space, and also an old shopping mall. So in German, in East German, that's Konsum, which is just the name for a small shopping mall. And they asked us to do something with the roof. So this was a flat roof. And we came with ideas, but really our idea in general is to find out what is needed and what is dreamt of in that space. And so we came with a few ideas, but most importantly to us was to really find out what people there wanted. And so we came with these research questions, like, what do you dream of? What utopias could be realized on roofs? And basically, what is missing? And to our surprise, you know, dreams can also be very grounded. And people mostly said that they lack the basic things that make a life kind of easier, which is a pharmacy, an ATM, benches to sit on to meet. Some people mentioned beauty in public space. And so after this research phase, which included walking through the streets and asking people, and also a rooftop dinner where we invited people from all over Chemnitz to dine in this on this roof, we collected these impulses and we built a spaceship, which to us represented utopia, you know, utopia of this area, utopia of generally city planning and urban planning and what people dream of, like going far. And around this spaceship, we built benches, which were in part made out of the material of the roof, because we knew that this roof was going to be taken down in a month or two. The whole shopping mall would be destroyed because there is too much empty space there, empty housing, empty buildings. And so we used parts of the roof to build these benches around the spaceship. And so people could come and sit on these benches, meet and see each other, look at this spaceship, and also listen to a sound installation that talked, that basically condensed everything that we'd heard on the streets. And this was our aim, to kind of like combine the very grounded needs of a community, which are kind of, they're simple. And yeah. They're just simple needs, which are really important. And then on the other side, this idea of like, yeah, where do we dream to? And roofs are a great place for this. And so the festival was 4 days and there were 4,000 people, I think. And this was only due to the pandemic. They had a limit of 1,000. So 1,000 came a day. 4,000 people came and sat on this roof. And I could feel that people were really, really touched by this, because on the one hand, roofs have there's just a magic in roofs. And on the other hand, people felt heard, because we'd come there as artists from another place, but we really took time to find out what people actually wanted. And we took it seriously, you know, when people say we want benches to sit on, that sounds, you know, like nothing, but actually if people want benches, then why not have benches? And after this festival was over, what was really important to us, which also addresses this question of sustainability that we talked about, Mami, what was really important to us was also that something remains. And obviously memories remain when you do something like a festival for a few days. But these benches were then also bought by the city of Chemnitz, and they will put them up in the Heckert area, so that people can still sit on these benches, which are partly made out of this Konsum, this shopping mall that no longer exists or that will no longer exist. But the trace remains where people sit is actually the physical remain of this shopping mall. And this was like the first time that we tested out this kind of way of doing things as a collective. But we're all based in Berlin, and this city obviously has incredible potential and is a fast moving place where there is a lot of question of like public space being not accessible to the community that is there. And so now we are planning our next project, which is hopefully going to take place this summer and also be longer, because our aim is really, on the one hand, to do short interventions, which are interesting and they're exciting and they make people maybe, you know, think or excite them. But really, our aim is to create spaces on rooftops that are sustainable, where people can come together and then take it over. So we want to be the impulse givers, just I guess a bit like Momi and what you were saying about the forest. You want to be the impulse giver, but then in the long term, we really want people to take this over, the people of this building. And so what we're looking at now is a building in Mitte, a Platte, which has around 80 plus people living there. And we're looking at building a space on the roof that is modular, so that it can be also shifted around, changed according to needs, if we do like a debate or a concert or a film evening. There will be rooftop gardening, and also our aim is to really have it green up there, because this is another thing about cities, that's the dark roofs obviously take away a lot of the, or store a lot of the heat. So we need greener roofs in general. And to then start this process that people start taking care of their own building. So we will be there in the beginning, but really on the long term, we would like these roofs to then become what the people want them to be. Yeah, and I think this is what I find really exciting about this initiative, is that it combines something artistic with a social, and creation with community. So this idea of really, we want to combine functional and beautiful, because they do need each other. Yeah, and there's really a magic on roofs. I'm sure that many of you know how roofs are magical, because there's air there, there's a sense of possibility. And I remember last summer in Chemnitz, when people were sitting on this roof, which was quite low down, so you could still see trees, it really felt like a market square. And market squares have something, you know, really special, where people come together. But this is a market square in the air. And there's so much potential there. There's some kind of magic that, yeah, I guess the ground is harder to find that. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. And just lastly, just to say, we really want to stay independent of organizations. So the idea is really that we offer something to a community, but we don't want to be a provider of services for a certain housing company or etc. The idea is really that we would like to use funds that are given to us, but really stay independent in the way we design things, and also in the, yeah, in the narrative that we create up there, because this is really not up to an agenda, but up to the community that is around there.
Yeah, thank you for bringing up this challenge around the funding as well. I mean, creating up places, like tapping into this untapped potential of roofs and making commons out of rooftop places in general is one thing, but also like creating a space where people actually can come together, obviously, is doing a huge service to local community, to democracy, to like to the well-being of people. And how to support that is an interesting challenge. I again invite everybody listening to get in touch or ask questions via the Telegram chat. And I before we like go wild just mingling between the projects, maybe Andre, you can give us some update on what's happening with Stadtbodenstiftung. Yeah, please.
Yeah, I tried to make it quite quickly because there's already so much very super interesting content there, and really nice to just keep on talking. Like for
just what saying, we have a little bit time to prolong our session because we started like 7 minutes late. But this is so you have know that you have time to share.
Cool. Thank you. So. What are we doing? We are an initiative mixed out of people who come from neighborhood initiatives in Berlin, from working in cooperatives, people working who've been like working in academia and kind of trying to find alternative ways of ownership, questioning kind of how the capitalist market in our cities destroys communities and people who are active in politics, quite a diverse group, kind of came together, also mostly people who didn't know each other before, and came together with the idea of creating something called, like something inspired by the Community Land Trust. So first, before talking about this organization, inspiration of a Community Land Trust, I want to talk again or more deeply about like what's actually the problem, what brings us together is kind of a problem that we see in Berlin is that in the last 10 years, Berlin has changed very quickly and in an accelerating speed. And spaces are becoming less and less available. Like it's really an explosion of kind of capitalist exploitation of the ground in Berlin. Ground rents are rising, prices for housing, commercial spaces are rising, local shops are being kicked out and replaced by kind of multinationally operating startups and funded startups, own companies. It's kind of all like a shift, which all goes in the way of like creating the highest profit from the space which is available. And this is really affecting our neighborhoods, it's affecting our communities when very important jobs are leaving, when places where childcare places used to be, they cannot pay the rent anymore, they're being replaced, like neighborhood shops which kind of have been there for 30 years and there's a community of people regularly going to the same cafe, knowing each other, and all of this being threatened. And this is kind of the problem we are like facing in this type of, yeah, where the only thing that counts is making the highest profit on the land as long as it's in private ownership, and there's so much pressure, like quite opposite to what we experienced in Chemnitz, where there was lots of empty space, and it's really the question, okay, how do you create inspiration and do something with empty space? Here we have the opposite of like, there's so much pressure on creating something. And so we came together and were inspired by this idea of community land trust. And community land trust are a type of organization which acts for many different places or houses, but in a specific location, like in a specific city. And they have three principles: community, land, and trust. So community means it's a community-run organization. So it's an organization where people who live there, who live in the neighborhood, they can directly become in part of the organization and vote for the people who are in the decision-making power. So there's a democratic structure in the bylaws and it's like fixated. It's also about land. So that's really important for us as Community Land Trust. We think we need this kind of civil society run, kind of neighborhood-based organization that owns the land. It doesn't have to do all the things on top of the land, but it's about kind of owning the land and making sure it stays out of a kind of a market, out of being traded to whoever can make the highest money, but actually take that land in the organization and then give contracts like for 50, 60, 100 years to groups or cooperatives which use the land, but for a social purpose or a neighborhood purpose. So for example, say, okay, we own this land, but now we give the house on top, we give it to a cooperative or an initiative, and they run the house for the next years, decades, but they have to comply to some like conditions. Like for example, if there's a big commercial space, they cannot just rent it to the highest price. They have to ask the neighborhood what is actually needed here. Or for the flats, they cannot just give them to anyone. They have to give the flats, at least a big amount of them, to people who actually need them the most. Like who they cannot be like, we just want these type of people here. No, they have to be open and accessible to people who actually need these flats and who are like have the most problems kind of on this capitalist market in Berlin. And this is the concept of trusteeship, like the trust that the Community Land Trust is acting as a trustee and holding the land in trusteeship for groups and communities who have otherwise not the possibility to decide what happens in the city because they don't have the monetary resources to like buy land. themselves. So these are the three principles, and we are finding a way of making that happen in Berlin. And we are just in the moment of creating a foundation. It will be like, we will hand in all the papers in January. We have collected 150,000 euros as a starting capital, kind of for making the first projects possible. But it's really about kind of a long-term vision. Like, there are foundations which operate like this, like ours, which are not non-profit organizations. And they started, one of them started 30 years ago in Switzerland with 20 or 14,000 francs. And now they manage more than 300 million francs. And it's really this idea of creating a foundation which starts slowly, but it only is not just for one property, because it's actually from each property giving a little money for like solidarity and to make the next project possible. And through this grow and kind of be a revolving land trust, which not in 5 years time, but in 10, 20, 30 years, really can have an impact in the city, but at the same time stays democratically accountable to the people who use the space, to the people who also are in the neighborhood, and who people who are active for a different type of city. So this, in short, is what we are kind of working on. And maybe to make it more clearer, like what could be a project, for example, I think there are two types of projects which we are already working on in the moment, where we're already in negotiations. One is quite a simple one. It's where there's people who inherited a multifamily house. There are like 20 or 15 people living in this house, and two of them are the people who inherited it. But they want to give this house, they don't want to deal with managing it and dealing with all the rents and repairs. They want to give it in good hands. And we negotiating with them a way to give it to the foundation, kind of, they can stay there, live there forever, like they have the rights secured, but we also make sure that the other tenants are treated well, and there's a small space which can be used as a neighborhood space, and make sure that it's unlocked for the neighborhood. Now it's not used. So this is one kind of quite simple way of kind of securing a house, securing the low rents there, securing that everybody can stay there, and that it's not sold to the highest price to some investment company from Luxembourg, which there's no face anymore. It just acts for highest profit. The other example is there's a commercial property in a bit outside of the center, and it's really at the edge of the residential areas. It's like in a commercial area, and there are three centers, like how do you would like housing centers, like a refugee center where people kind of refugees who arrived in Germany are put in, like not their own choice, like they are put in there. Can live everything, but they live really at the edge of the city, and it's really, there's nothing around. It's very like a dire situation. There's another center where people who are homeless and alcoholics, and then there's a big house where only people live who work short term in Berlin. And then there's a very empty public space around. There's no amenities, nothing. And there is a house which we try to buy and convert into something that's actually of use for the people living there, like kind of creating a point of connection between people living in the residential areas in these different housing centers, and secure affordable rents for social purposes, for organizations that try to make something different. So these are the examples, and I think what is it about is about this idea of breaking up ownership, of like not thinking about something as owned by one person, one organization, but really involving as many people as possible when talking about something and giving them rights to have a say. And through this, maybe, you know, being guided by this principle of a commons, of like, how can we create this land which should be a commons? I mean, we cannot multiply it or produce new land. Like, how can we most possibly treat it as something that is commonly owned. This is the vision, and that's what we are working on step by step, trying to realize the first projects next year.
Yeah, thank you so much. I love this initiative a lot, and I was walking in the park today and was, you know, in some way the park is a commons, and then you have the stories of people buying a land and really accepting thereby the kind of custodianship that they take for this land. And I, especially in the city, so I find it so interesting to invite people into like active custodianship for their places. And I feel like this mechanism can empower this relationship from you to your neighborhood or to you, to the place you're in. And I mean, obviously Berlin is, there's a lot of like business happening in the moment. And but I mean, still from the visionary power of this project, I find it so strong that I'm wondering, like, what is the challenges for places to actually become community land trusts, and why is there not more and more and more places already like falling in your way? And then just to add to this question, maybe like your own understanding of agency, you gave an example where you said you want to go into shaping the place yourself as a way, or like, where's the activist, where's the city land trust, how much are you giving an impulse in the same way that Mara said you want to like give an impulse, or like, yeah, you feel the question mark somehow.
so there are two things. So the first one, referring to the challenges. So I mean, the message challenge is that for buying kind of a piece of land, kind of funding it, like it's millions. Like we're talking about millions of euros for kind of a property in Berlin, which is perfect. Like it's crazy. Like it's, yeah. So it's really about how do we gather the amount of funds we need. Find people who give maybe loans for very great conditions because they want to support it. It's really about kind of collecting the money to even be possible to make things happen. So this is the one big challenge. The second challenge is always kind of work. We are already a group of 20 active people and many other supporters. Like we have 140 people who gave money and who are also feeling like supporters of the project. And just in this small group of 20 already to work as a community, work as a group and make collective decisions, look at hierarchies, powers, kind of how do you deal with different interests, different, like, where should we start, like Berlin is big, what kind of projects should we first work on, where should we put our resources, our energy. That's always a big challenge, like just kind of if you want to make many people voices heard, you also have to find a way of mediating these voices and kind of still come together. So these are two of the challenges which come to my mind right away. We are working on them. I think we are dealing with them, but they keep on being challenges, and we always have to find new ways of dealing with them. And the second question is this role of initiative versus being maybe an instrument which can be appropriated by the neighborhood initiatives. And it's something in between, like it's it's sometimes more the one role, sometimes more the other. I think in the beginning, we have to be a bit active and show some initiative because you have to show what you can do, what the instrument can be used for to then be approached. But there are already many initiatives approaching us and being like, hey, we have this house in our neighborhood. We want to this and this happen. Like how do we make that happen? Like how can you support us? So I think making the first projects possible, there will be others coming. And I think because we always separate the ownership of the land from the ownership of the house on top, it always also restricts our power. Like there are many things, maybe we have a certain vision, but we cannot decide everything. Like we always have to find somebody like a neighborhood group which works together with a cooperative in shaping actually what's happening on the place. Like we can only set the parameters, but we always cooperate with others. And by having to always cooperate with others, it also kind of, we might have to have some vision to extract the first groups and the people and the neighborhood, depending always on the place. maybe they're already there, like there are houses where there is already a very strong vision and it's really us just bringing in the finances and kind of the long-term stability and being like, we have a structure which enables you to make your goals, which you already have, to make them long-lasting and give them a structure which is not only valid for the next 15 years, but actually can work for 100 years or more. So it depends quite a lot. But I think the idea, there is some initiative we bring in, but it's also restricted because we are not the people realizing the project in the end, the everyday of the project. We only set out the conditions. And we always have to cooperate. And I think that's good that we always have to cooperate because otherwise it gives too much power to us.
I love the aspect of timing, you know, organizing always is also like synchronized by the factor of time. And sometimes it's easy to have a short time span where you like produce something. And sometimes it opens up a big thing to have like a longer window of, yeah, operating. Speaking about time, our time is getting very short now before we get ready for the next panel. But I would love to hear if you want to share some inspiration that just came up for you in this moment listening to each other. And obviously, I want to just get a glimpse of moment into part two. This was a great cliffhanger. Yeah. Maybe Mara first. You have some fresh insights.
Fresh insights. No pressure. Okay. Fresh insights. Yeah. I mean, as I was listening to Andre and before to Momin as well, and just thinking about like what these three initiatives have in common, I think, especially this year for many parts of the world where this pandemic changed everyday lives and maybe also perspectives on place, I think we are coming to more of a sense of like growing belonging, you know. I like this word belonging in the sense that there's longing in there, which is normally far away. But I think a lot of us are also realizing that a lot of what is there and what we need is around us, that we don't have to go too far, and that it's about committing to this place and making it better. So I think this is what I find really beautiful about these three initiatives, is that there is something about a shared commitment to take responsibility for growing. Yeah.
For me, it's like, wow. It's like so interesting to hear about a project in a sort of a metropolitan city, you know, like we're talking about like an early planning city like Jenin, and then we're talking about Berlin, like a massive metropolitan city. Well, I thought about like obviously like the roof garden project in a city which is full of big businesses and building and stuff like this. I think this is sort of a very utopian escape out of Berlin is still have a lot of nice playground and greenery side of it, that where people can escape a little bit the city and just go for a long walk or something, which is nice, you know, as well as here in London. But to have something easy access in your own building, not your own building, but the building that you basically live there, and it's absolutely amazing. And to have like I love the idea of a dining table. The idea of the dining table, I think, is very interesting in this kind of like very diverse community now in Berlin. And I think there's a lot of there, you know, there's a lot of so much to be done there, so much to be work around community, that like how to make sense of community. I think this is a good question about like a metropolitan city you know, and a futuristic city sort of, and a very capitalist in the meantime, as Andrew was saying. And I think I just, the only thing come from my mind, it was like, I think it's we're working in a complete reversal project. Like for me, I want Janine to become very invested in, you know, I wouldn't say I want Janine to become a capitalist. There's no doubt, there's no question in there, because there's the landscape and the politics around it, it will not make it that way, you know, which is, I'm very relaxed from this point. But in the meantime, there is no investment in Janine. So sort of how to work around, juggle between these two spaces, and how to switch it in the meantime, you know, and how to look what underneath this, like all of this, how to bring it, populate up in a small little city that suffer from a long period of a lockdown, of a military lockdown. This a big question. But for me, it's like the second part of the project, it's a lot of questioning. It's a lot of like, how can we move left the whole community into a new different level by programming a lot of different new visual program to the community, into this forest side of Janine City, and how to lift them from the dystopia to utopia, you know? And how can we do the journey from dystopia to utopia without harming anything, as we had this two fantastic example, which is the Freedom Theater and Cinema Janine, that both end up costing a lot of harm to the people who work there. And how can we do the safe journey again from dystopia to utopia, and begin left the community, because I feel as a member of a Palestinian community from Janine, I do feel that once upon a time Janine and the West Bank was there. They were there. There was a lot of happiness, there was a lot of lightness, there was a lot of freedom and expression and sense of individuality, you know. And how can, so this space, I believe in this space to be the hub of a factory of argument, discussion, ideas, and formulating and research on from small things to big things, you know. And
okay,
I think the people there have been abandoned from so many small beautiful things.
Thank you, Daniel.
You know,
over to you.
And how can we bring back those things into, and I think this space is the right space for it. I'm not talking about a building here, I'm not talking about theater or cinema, Janine. I'm talking about like an environmental space, which is an open, massive, huge space that can be done a lot there for people to come. And how can we lead? And the, all of this equation for me, this is what the next thing, and how can we see this equation being questioning by the community there? And how can we leave the space between the curator and the performer, which is the community, you know? And in which time can we leave this gap and to see it in a foggy mingling and trying to struggle and trying to succeed and all of that. So I think this is for me the next step of the project, is to let people let go with a lot of like a lot of things in a relief, and here where we can have a new beginning, you know. Yeah. And I think the thing, I mean, the thing with the housing things in Europe now, and Berlin and the ownership, you know, I think it's a big question also, you know. I think this is what I meant by reversal. that it's not a big question in Palestine, because by nature in Palestine, you have to have a house. You have to own a house. There's no way. You have to have a garden. There's no way, you know. And now, like, I have so many friends of mine in Berlin that been renting for the last 30 years. And when I raised the question about, are you planning to own your own space in Berlin? They would be like, they're not sure about it. And also the idea of like rich people coming and poor people have to leave to the edge of the area, you know, not only refugees who are arriving to the edge of the city, but also the people who have born in this neighborhood, their kids can't afford to keep in living in this neighborhood. So, and that will create this a family saga. And you know, like all of those questions, and there is no right, there is no wrong, you know. So yeah, it's a lot of a question in there for me, as well as making it fact and making it functional and work, you know.
Thank you, Andre. Any reflections or words of goodbye?
Thanks so much for the. Yeah, just inspiration, this time to talk. Like, I find it super inspiring. I mean, also very grounding, you know, just talking with you. I mean, it's like, yeah, there are also these different realities and yeah. Like, I mean, we all have our local struggles and kind of see what can we do here locally. And I think this is important to not always, yeah, I think you have to act where you are grounded to and where you're connected to and where you're connected, but it's also see like what kind of solidarity across spaces can you create, and kind of what kind of possibilities we have here, what kind of privileges we have here, how can we connect with other spaces in a mutual exchange and learn from each other. Yeah, that's just as a point to go forward, but otherwise, I'm just grateful for this time today.
Yeah, thank you. I have the same input of how can we integrate these partnerships between placemaking efforts in one place and the other, and how can there be some kind of portals or windows of, of just going in relationship with each other, so you can learn from each other's realities in the way. This was a great panel for the framing placemaking the solar punk, and I hope we can follow you guys and support your journeys forward. I wish you all a great ending of the year and lots of energy for the upcoming year and the whole new decade, so to say. The next talk we have on our channel is Michelle Bowens giving a talk on the cyber physical infrastructure that is needed for humanity to organize in the planetary boundaries that are there. And this is going to start in 5 minutes, so all the listeners can grab a coffee or a tea and tune back in. And meanwhile, thanks a lot and a big applause for all the beautiful sharing today.
Thank you, Jacob, for the initiative. It was really, really interesting. Beautiful. Thank you.